Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texas, down to Monterey, Faraday, Santa Fe, Tallapoosa, Glen Rock, Black Rock, Little Rock, Austin.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely, since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumble Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Thank you very much, Audrey. Thank you for getting us on the air each and every week. We could not do it without you. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio, folks. This is Keith Haley, and I'm the host of your Jumble Justice radio show. And Mike, I am not going to do it tonight. I have heard everything there is to hear about that woman. I'm not even going to mention her name. I've heard the last time she trimmed her toenails. So I'm not going to talk about that woman. So that's it. Welcome to our show. And Johnny Cash, we want to thank you for trucking along. And folks, if you haven't sang that song before, it's difficult. More than 90 cities and states, and I think he even touches by Wichita. And that will touch the heart of our guest on the show tonight. So Emily and Audrey, thank you very much. And Emily, I know you have a good news story for tonight. We sent you out looking for the craziest news story you could find that was real. And I think you found one that was pretty good. And, well, I won't give our listeners any more of a tip about that. Let me talk about what's going to go on here on the show tonight. Now, our special guest is going to be Dr. Michael Palmiotto. He's going to be talking about us concerning his recent visit and lecture series tour in Serbia and Bosnia. We're calling it something like Academic Adventures in Serbia and Bosnia. And I'm sure he's going to tell us a lot about an area that very few folks know much about, to be honest, and I had to do a little reviewing tonight myself with a CIA fact book and Nation Master and even looked on an encyclopedia to be able to try to keep pace with Dr. Palmiotto tonight, but he has certainly traveled the world and lectured in many places and the author of who knows how many books by now, but we'll be getting to him. Last week we tried to do a little update and tutorial on the immigration bill that the Senate, I believe at this very moment, is still wrestling with. I just got an update from the director of the High Minutemen, Jim Furnison, and we're going to have him on the show in a few weeks. And, of course, the Minutemen have tracked this legislation, have been a major part of trying to get the United States to do something about protecting our borders, so that should be interesting in the future, too. Let me tell you a little bit about the show for those of you who might be listening for the first time. Our purpose is the same as it is every week. We're going to discuss news, issues, and events and developments in the always difficult and sometimes humorous field of criminal justice. And we have some of those humorous incidents tonight, as a matter of fact, that we'll talk about in the news segment. The show is dedicated to all those
Palace Court, Police Corrections, Juvenile Justice Professionals who serve us throughout the United States and indeed the world, and folks that have traveled like Dr. Palmieto. He's ran into our agents and officers around the world as I have in some venues. What we try to do with this show is look inside criminal justice and look at its professionals and their practice. And I think if you've listened the last several weeks, you've probably gotten a good example of that. 2 weeks ago, we had Karen Munch on, who was the director of training for the Ohio Department of Natural Resources Watercraft Division. Of course, these officers are fully sworn peace officers, just like any other peace officer in the state of Ohio. And she did a marvelous job describing the complications and the courage and I think the dedication it takes to be an ODNR officer. Let me do a commercial for them. They're looking for officers right now. So if you're interested, you can just Google that at Ohio Department of Natural Resources and click on the Watercraft Division, and you'll see some nice recruiting information there, qualifications for the job, action steps to get the job. And in fact, there's even a video on there about some of the things that they do. So that would be fun. I'd be remiss if I didn't comment about Blog Talk Radio itself. I always say it's a leading-edge technology, and it gets more out front virtually every month that it's been around. If you go to Blog Talk Radio's site and just sort of browse around in all the different genres, you'll see that I think they now have more than 1,600 show hosts. And tonight, before the show came on, I was just browsing around what came on at 8 o'clock, and gosh, I was listening to a show about wrestling and extreme ultra competition fighting. So they have them on everything else. I think there's 5 or 6 of them about the American Idol show, which is sort of interesting. But what is possible, wrestling I guess would be an example, any person or interest group that can be from cigars to astronomy, from darts to homicide investigation, you can have your own show. And you can broadcast live and streaming audio over the Internet worldwide to an unlimited number of listeners. I always like to say that twice, and you can do as much as 14 hours a week, perhaps more now. You have some famous industrialists and authors and people. If you go to the site and browse around, you'll see on there, and they have kind of like a sales pitch for their book every week. So it's a fascinating technology, and of course it's absolutely free. And the minute the show is over, within 5 or 10 minutes, the show's archived, so you can go back and listen to the show again yourself, or you can download it to your own computer, MP3 player, whatever you choose. So just think of it, free broadcasting worldwide. Drop back about 10 years and think what it would have taken to have a radio station and a show where you could do an hour or a half-hour show and do it worldwide, multi-day show during the week. It would be an incredible cost, and this one is absolutely free. So we want to thank Alan Levy, who's the CEO of Blog Talk Radio. I think I mentioned last week they're going to be doing some major upgrades on the website and the technology starting July 1, and we're hoping that this will work fabulously. But I know one of the major innovations is going to be you won't need a telephone to call into the show anymore. You can do that right from your computer and call in the host and any of the other people that are on the show at that time. So, like I said, on the back of that Jesus box, it says, get your own box. Well, I'm telling you, get your own show. I think it's a fabulous thing. We're still okay on primetime. I want to mention that. Mr. Levy mentioned that in July, when you booked your next shows back in June, that if you didn't have enough listeners, they were going to move you out of that 8 to 10 or 11 o'clock block. And since last week, you know, I had my goldfish, my dog, and two neighbors, and now two ducks out back, and one squirrel have joined. So I guess that's enough to keep us in the prime time slot, at least for the time being. So we're thankful for that. Future shows, let me comment on that before I bring our guest on. I think he's already logged on. Next week we have a really interesting show, and it is technical, and we're going to have Sergeant Kevin Cavanaugh, who is a master taser instructor. That's not just an instructor. He is a master taser instructor for that little electric dart shooting gun that puts out about 50,000 volts and a few amps that drops you and debilitates you for about 5 seconds to the police and take you into custody if you're a resisting or conflicting type of person. So it will be interesting to have him come on. I did notice in a news story today that the latest thing they're adding to the taser is a camera. Of course, people say that the police would use it, or some would say that the police use this thing in an unwarranted condition, but the camera now will record everything that happens. So one more example of surveillance cameras of sorts being everywhere that we can think. Tonight's show is Dr. Michael Palmiotto from Wichita State University. He's a full professor at that university, and he's the author of numerous books, and I'm going to have you tell you about some of his writing enterprises and one of these major projects that he's editing right now, and he's the working editor for, and perhaps you might be interested in that yourself as a listener, because he could get you enlisted in a writing project. But he's going to be talking about academic adventures in Serbia, and let's use that famous line in Blog Talk Radio. I'm going to click on his microphone and ask him, can he hear me?
Hear you.
Dr. Palmiotto, is that you?
Yes, it's me.
Oh, thank you very much. How's everything in Wichita?
Very nice, and about 90 degrees.
Oh, okay. Nothing like continental interior, is there?
No, it's very windy today, but it has calmed down.
Yeah, you know, I this past week I walked across the screen, and I love Turner Classic Movies, and they head on The Wizard of Oz.
okay, yeah. On the Elbrick Road, yeah. Actually, it's interesting. Western Kansas, there is another house. That's a Wizard of Oz house in the Elbrick Road.
Oh, is that right? I didn't
it's
know that.
It's kind of interesting.
What little town or city is that in?
I forget. I did it about 13, 14 years ago when I first came to Wichita. And, you know, I just took this highway which runs across the whole state of Kansas called Kellogg, Route 54. And when you get closer to the end of the state, it's on the western part of the state. Very small house, not very big.
I'll have to remember that. You mentioned to the people listening, perhaps some first-time callers, what they do to call in. The number they use to call into the show is 347-996-5983. That's 347-996-5983. And when you call in, we can hold as many as 5 callers at a time, and we can all talk to each other, which is a very nice feature of Blog Talk Radio. So that's how you get a hold of us. Michael, you know, one of the traditions we have on the show as of last fall, you know, Audrey, who's from Great Britain, to be a blonde, she loves blonde jokes.
Right.
She's a consumer and a collector of blonde jokes. I wouldn't venture to say how many years. I don't know how Mike is smiling. I don't know how old Audrey is, but I think she has a lot of blonde jokes. Could you stand by while we play one of them for her?
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
Okay, Audrey, go ahead. Let's see what you have to say.
Professor Haley, this is my latest blonde joke. I hope the listeners like this one. A blonde stormed up to the front desk of the library and said, I have a complaint. Yes, ma'am, said the librarian looking up at her. I borrowed a book last week, and it was horrible. Puzzled by her complaint, the librarian asked what was wrong with it. It had way too many characters, and there was no plot whatsoever, said the blonde. The librarian nodded and said, ah, so you must be the person who took our phone book.
All right, that's a great one. We'll put that one in the log, and we'll call that one a keeper, Audrey. That's just fine. Well, Michael, I had a couple, several news stories here that I'd like you to join me on to talk about, if you don't mind.
No, I don't mind. Go ahead.
We have something here that I don't know when the last time you arrested someone for DUI. We'll get to your formal introduction here in just a moment. But someone out in Washington State, this woman, I got this out of Police Beat magazine, American Police Beat. She just broke the record for a DUI consumption. I mean her blood alcohol content. This is a story from Redmond. It says there's a lady who could probably drink any of us under the table. That's an understatement. Authorities recently arrested the woman after she was involved in 2 car crashes in succession. When the police gave her a breath test, she registered an unbelievable 0.47 blood alcohol content. And that's six times the legal limit in the state of Washington. She was still conscious and still driving a car. So people were curious about this. You know what they did? They went back and checked the 356,000 breath tests that were administered since 1998.
Right.
They turned up only 35 above 0.40, and none of them were higher than 0.5. So this woman is the hands down winner in terms of the drug test. So I guess, you know, if you're going to have some distinction in life, that's as good as some, anyway, isn't it?
That's right.
I can't imagine someone being upright and driving a car at that level.
Yeah, I think you're correct on that.
Here's an interesting one that Emily has for me, and I'll bet you'll have a comment on this because perhaps a long time ago we even talked about something like this. So here's a news story that Emily's gathered for us.
Professor Haley, here is a story I know you will be interested in. I can recall your telling me that your marathon running times would not be as good on days when there was a full moon. Here is the story about Brighton and my former home country, Great Britain. Extra police patrols for full moons. Police in Brighton are to put on extra patrols on nights when there is a full moon to combat an increase in violence. It follows research by the Sussex Force, which concluded there was a rise in violent incidents when the moon was full and also on paydays. Inspector Andy Parr told the BBC he compared crime statistics for Brighton and Hove with lunar graphs to discover the trend. A spokeswoman for Sussex Police said research carried out by us has shown a correlation between violent incidents and full moons. More officers will be out on Brighton streets during full moons over the summer months, she added. Inspector Parr has said he would be interested in contacting universities who may be interested in examining the link further. He said, from my experience, over 19 years of being a police officer, undoubtedly on full moons, we do seem to get people with, sort of, stranger behavior, more fractious, argumentative. And I think that's something that's been borne out by police officers up and down the country for years. Past research into the phenomenon includes a study by Professor Mitchell Zemecki of the Polish Academy of Sciences, who argued that a full moon could affect criminal activity and health. In 1998, a three-month psychological study of 1,200 inmates at Amley Jail in Leeds discovered a rise in violent incidents during the days either side of a full moon.
Well, what do you think, Michael?
Well, I remember as you know, working there when I was a police officer, we used to talk about that. When the full moon thing came out, you know, we're going to have a lot of problems.
You know, I think there is. Of course, it's correlation, but I think there's definitely something there. I can recall the same thing way back.
I find that very interesting, you know.
And one of the things that I found by going back, I used to keep all these record books on running 10Ks and half marathons, full marathons and all that business. Right. And somebody got me interested in this. In fact, we did a study of traffic accidents in the most accident-prone county in the state of Ohio, just east of Cincinnati. In fact, a state trooper conducted the research, and he found out that, you remember the biorhythm business?
Oh, yeah, I remember that years ago, right?
Intersecting, it was the emotional, the physical, and the
intellectual.
Right. And when it all started with your date of birth, and these things went on for life in a uniform pattern. So when you had three downers, where they were below the midline, when you were at your worst, and by golly, it was something like 30 or 40% of those single car accidents, you know, where they run off the road and hit the bridge or the tree or a cow or something like that, those people were having double or triple cross lines.
Kind of interesting.
And I remember Japan was crazy about this. They were, assigning their workers and taking their pilots off planes when they had emotionally and critical days and that type of thing. So, you know, you go over there. They want somebody to do some research. You could go over to Great Britain and look at some moon charts, could you?
I don't know about that.
Well, I could. I'll pursue that tomorrow. I've got some other news stories here I think I'm going to hold off on. I think apropos of tonight, though, and the work that the Senate's trying to do on this immigration bill, I thought it was interesting, though, that the Border Patrol agents, the National Border Patrol Council, which represents 11,000 of 13,000 agents currently working for the Border Patrol, just voted no confidence in their Border Patrol chief, David Aguiar.
Oh.
That's kind of interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, very interesting.
I know that they're looking for officers now. I think if you applied today, you could probably be on the border by Sunday, couldn't you?
It seems that way. It seems like they've been looking for Border Patrol agents for a number of years now.
Right, they have. And but they're saying that the morale is just shot, not only this immigration bill, but, of course, you've got Jose Campion and Ignacio Ramos, the two officers that they sent to prison.
Oh, 12 yeah.
years of prison for this drug dealer that, what, ended up shot in the rear end?
Right, right.
We helped his, you know, his prosecution against him and all that business. So if there's ever a place for pardon, it seems like that was one of them. I did have one other story that sort of struck me that, you know, the death penalty continues to be one of the most I forget, does Kansas have the death penalty?
I don't think they have it.
I know
yes, they do have death penalty, but it's not used that often.
Yeah, you don't do it.
Have it, no. Yes, they do have it, yeah.
These two guys in Chicago in a 1993 murder, and it's interesting how they caught them. They worked at a place called Brown's Chicken Place.
Okay.
So they decided to rob the place, and they come in and they get $2,000. They take five of the employees, walk them into two different coolers, walk-in coolers, and shoot all five of them in the head and kill them. Then these guys took off, and one of the women that was associated with him, she came in with some information years later. I mean, you know, more than 10 years later. And then they finally picked these guys up, and they did a DNA check on a chicken dinner that somebody ate and left there.
Right.
Can you believe one of these characters started eating a chicken dinner after they killed those people?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Unbelievable. And guess what they got?
They get.
They got life.
Oh.
Life in prison. I don't know what your view is on the death penalty, but it seems like if there's ever a place where it was appropriate, somebody who shoots five people in the head in a robbery ought to be a number one candidate, I would think. Okay. Michael, tell me a little bit about your background. And
I think you know, Keith, you have police experience. I was a former police officer in New York State, and I also that's where I got my one of my degrees, my bachelor's degree. I went to Pennsylvania and taught at a community college for about 8 years, and while over there, I headed a program, a criminal justice program. Then also local police chiefs asked me to start a training academy because state of Pennsylvania Commonwealth wanted to required mandatory police training, so we got that going. And then after finishing my master's and doctorate degree, I went to Illinois, Western Illinois University. Taught there a number of years, and then went to a couple other universities, and currently now I'm at Wichita State University.
Okay, where did you get the doctorate degree?
I got it at the University of Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh, okay,
right.
Great place. Well, good, and you've been in Wichita how many years?
Since 94, I guess that's 13 or 14 years now.
And I know that you just don't do the ordinary there. You teach undergraduate and graduate classes.
I teach a number of different classes. I teach introduction. I teach crime prevention. I teach community policing. And then this coming fall, I'm going to be teaching police administration. I teach online and also in the class. So.
Oh, great. And you've taught graduate and undergraduate, and you've been involved in training, so you've worked in the field, so there isn't much you haven't done. And tell us just a little bit about before we get into Bosnia and Serbia, about what you've done in terms of world travel, because I know I've had you on the show to talk about some of that.
Well, I've been attending a number of international conferences. I attended one in India in 99, and then I also went to had one in Bavaria, Germany, attended in the Czech Republic, in Poland. Last year, also one in Bahrain. I also had the opportunity to be a Fulbright Scholar in Bahrain for a whole semester last year. And I also taught in the Netherlands for about a month in Maastricht.
Mm-hmm.
I might have missed a place here and there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's incredible. That's not the ordinary academic career, is it?
Well, you know, but I think you need to leave our country to see what other people are doing in other countries. And it's amazing how far advanced other countries are and how well trained sometimes their police are.
Exactly, and those ventures have sort of gotten you into some writing about this and a couple major projects you've been involved with in terms of the encyclopedia business.
Right. One is already printed. I was the managing editor of the World Police Encyclopedia, which means that there's about 185 countries that belong to the United Nations, 186. And we have the police structure of all the countries that are members of the United Nations. I had the responsibility to approve every one of those entries that was accepted into the encyclopedia. So I think that came out about a year or so ago.
That's what, a two-volume set, isn't it?
That's a two-volume set, right. And apparently I'm working on a four-volume set on the World Police Encyclopedia, Encyclopedia of International Security. And it's published by the publisher is a Congressional Quarterly Press out of Washington, D.C. I know many people are familiar with the Congressional Quarterly.
And you're trying to get all of us rounded up and get our work done by when?
Right. I was going to send you an email to do that.
No.
we have basically about 875 or so, 890 contributors. And right now we're up to almost, I know these figures are close to the, close to 1.6 million words. I think we're close. We're right now around 1.57 million words.
Hmm.
Okay. And right now we're in the process of reviewing the entries, and we're also looking for a few individuals who may be familiar with the field. Right now we're looking for some of the people who have withdrawn or who have we have lost contact with. So in the next week we'll be adding a few more entries to our list.
Okay, great. Well, tell us about Bosnia and Serbia. Where do we start?
I don't know. I guess sometimes one thing leads to another, okay? I guess the only thing I can really tell you, probably ought to begin, is that I have a book out on community policing, which you may know, okay? It's been out for a few years. And a couple years ago, and the most amazing thing is that I didn't realize that it was being used in other countries, okay? My understanding is that it has been translated into Korean, and somebody told me it was translated into Serbian. But about a year ago, or two years ago, I went to a conference in Prague, in the Czech Republic, and I came across an individual who was a professor at the University of Krakovic in Serbia. And he came to me and he said, I am using your book for my course. Okay. And so he was he really liked the book, and he basically told me that he used the book to implement community policing in the city of Prakovic, which is about a city of about a couple hundred thousand people.
Yeah.
And he was able to get community policing going in his city, okay? And he's a professor of criminalistics in the College of Law at the University of Prakovic. So we got that, you know, make a long story short, over a period of time, we conversed, and then he invited me to go to the University of Krakovic and have a number of lectures. So that's how that turned out. I don't know if you want me to continue or you want to ask some specific questions.
Go ahead. And you actually went over there then.
I left in Wichita on May the 7th. Of course, it takes a day or two to get there, so I arrived in Belgrade on May the 8th. And I returned on Sunday, May the 20th. And the city of Krakovic is about a couple hours away from Belgrade, which is the only international airport in the country of Serbia.
Mm-hmm. And what can you tell us about the very complicated political situation there?
Well, the only thing I tell you is kind of interesting. Obviously Serbia and it's part of the old Yugoslavia, and of course there must have been about six different nationalities involved that comprise the former Yugoslavia. So I spent four or five days in Yugoslavia, then I went up to Bosnia, okay? But Bosnia is comprised of, that's where a lot of the conflicts took place back in the from about 91 to 95, there's a war that took place in Bosnia and also in Serbia, okay? And when I was in Bosnia, I really spent time in Banja Luka, which is a major city and a capital for the Republic of Srpska. Now, if you take the country of Bosnia, you must understand it's comprised of three major groups. It's comprised of Croatians, it's comprised of Serbians, and it's comprised of Muslims. Okay. Now the Republic, and there's a mixture of the different peoples in all these different areas. Okay. But I spent all my time in the Republic of Srpska, which is predominantly Serbian. Okay. And they have their own police department, and one of my sponsors was the director of police for the Republic of Srpska.
I see. Okay. Well, what did you have some time? What did you find out about what they do in policing there?
Well, I find out a couple. One of the things that's kind of impressive is that, for instance, the director of police is obtaining a doctorate degree, and when he wrote his master's degree, he wrote in community policing. And one of the interesting things I found out is that he cited my book in his book on community policing, and he is responsible for the whole all the police in the Republic of Srpska. But that's a separate from the police of the central part of central government. Okay, now there are police in the central government. Okay. One of the goals is to have one police department for the whole country, but apparently, that has not occurred yet. But I found out that the police. One interesting thing is where I stayed at was at the police college. That you actually a little different than America, where you start off as a patrol officer and you have to work your way up the ranks. In Bosnia, where I was at the police college. You go in and you study, and if you're able to be successfully graduate, you would get a bachelor's degree, and you would go in as an officer, okay?
Right.
You know, like a lieutenant or something, you know, like a lieutenant, okay?
Romania is the same way.
Yeah, right. Well, it's kind of interesting. They're different than America. You would not start off as as a patrol officer, but it seems to be somewhat rigorous, okay? Because they start off, I don't know, several hundred students, and then by the time they leave, the time they graduate in 4 years is only about 45. And one of the interesting things, at least in the the police college, is that they have to do a survey. You have to do a study, and I had the opportunity. I was invited in to do a survey where. A young man who did a study of community policing in his city. I don't know the name of the city. I can't remember the city. And he had to. He had a PowerPoint presentation, and he had to defend that to a panel of three professors. Okay. And my host, who's a professor at the University of Krakowicz, was his mentor in this program. So if a person is a mentor. Trying to get that person through the program, and this young man was successful, and he did pass. An interesting thing about it is during his presentation, his family, his parents were there as well, his girlfriend and his sister, and some friends. They were there while he was giving the presentation, and just like and they also the professors. did ask questions of him, and he had to defend it. And they even asked me to ask a question, which I did. But of course, he gave his presentation in Serbian, and he spoke in Serbian, so they had to interpret it for me.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting process, isn't it?
Yeah, very. It is extremely interesting. And then later on later in the evening, he and his family had a party for him, and I was invited along with the panel, his panel. So all three of us went to his graduation. Went to his little family get-together.
I wonder how that, do you think we'll ever see a model like that in the United States, or are we wedded to the idea that you start on patrol when midnight's 8?
I think we have a culture that you have to start at the bottom, and it's kind of amazing that, and you, since you also in a criminal justice program, how many of my students who, because we have a master's degree at a master's program, Wichita State, I find it amazing that we have students who get a bachelor's degree and a criminal justice and a master's degree, Then he entered. They still entered the police department as a patrol officer, and they have to work with someone who may never finished, just finished high school. So, but I think we have a culture that would be very difficult to change it.
Probably not that unusual in fields that are sort of in the throes of their professionalization move. You know,
right.
Education was kind of the same way. Public school teaching, and
yeah.
If you went back far enough, of course, you know, it's, you went back far enough, 1900s, early 1900s, if you graduated from high school, you were a teacher.
Right. But it also seems to be, if we talk to people from the early, I still look at education in the earlier days, one time it was a great accomplishment to finish 8th grade, okay? But it also seemed to be, high school was a great thing. Only a few people go to college, but it also seemed that the educational was much more rigorous than the earlier periods, of time.
Yeah, I know you've seen that book, Who We Are Now, but
right.
It's a great book, and it talks about one of the data charts in there shows that 1900, 5% of the American population graduated from high school.
Right. And today...
a whole bunch of them could read.
right. Yeah, but also, too, obviously we didn't have the big demands of education, and one of the things we use education for is prolong... the opportunity to get into the workforce. So, we also know that doctors and lawyers didn't necessarily go to university. They worked. They were, trained by other doctors or other attorneys.
So, in that area that you were in, and you lectured at 4 different universities, am I correct?
I don't know. I was at 3. University of Krakowicz, the Police College, and also the Pan American University, which was private. University of Krakowicz is a public university. The police college, they call it the High Police College. Because they also have not only the academic part, but they also have the police training taking place there.
Uh-huh. I sent you that article, I think, out of the Chronicle that appeared a couple of days ago about how the stabilization of this university system hasn't taken place since the war. And... I was struck. I thought it was odd that all the power was at the bottom, that these particular faculties controlled their own budgets and everything, and they.
Well, that's basically. I think you're correct, because when they talked about me, it was the faculty that sponsored me. My host said that the faculty approved your coming over here. The faculty approved, for the transportation, for the hotel, and all that sort of thing. So apparently the faculty had to approve it, okay? But then I also, when I was over there, I met the rector. They call him the rector rather than the president of the university. I also met the dean of the college. So I would think that these individuals do have some authority, the deans and the rector and the president.
Here's a quote out of that article, Michael. It says that Rector Boris, it's T-I-H-I-T-E or Tihi or T-I-R,
right.
He said that the university rector is just a ceremonial figure, like the English queen, and he's the former rector of the University of Sarajevo.
Oh, is that right? Okay. And that's
now
what we, that could be true. I didn't really get into detail about that, okay? I didn't really ask a lot of questions about that. But if I ever go back, which is a possibility, I'll try to get some more information. One of the things Keith, is that these universities want to cooperate with American universities. And they would like our students to go to their university, and they would like to send their students to our university. They also would like to have exchange of faculty as well, which I think you probably already are aware of.
Right, those are great ideas.
Right.
I mean, everybody benefits in something like that. What's the crime rate like there? I mean, what are patrol officers and people... Did you get to work?
Well, let me say something very interesting. I spent... my host was a big walker, so... We would walk through the city of Krakowicz in the nighttime, okay? And we would walk any place, okay? We didn't hardly see that many police officers. We didn't see that many patrol cars. And we walked down dark streets. It didn't really matter. And everybody, was very comfortable. The first night I arrived in Krakowicz, they had a rock concert. And the people really, of course they're saying in Serbian, and the people, of all ages were watching, listening to the rock concert, and their children to elderly people. There were a few police officers walking around, but just being in the area, no one was really creating any problems. And my understanding is my colleague told me they think they had one murder all last year in a city of 200,000 people.
Isn't that incredible? And the nation is what, four million? Is that right?
Something like that, 3 or 4 million people. Okay. Now this is in central Serbia. Okay, this city here. Now Belgrade is maybe a little different because that's a city of 2 million people.
Okay.
Right. So that's a very large, very large city. But Brockovich was, very small, and they really believe in community policing. And what you have to understand too is that there's one police department for the whole country in Serbia, not like in the United States. We have about 13,000 police departments.
Right.
So,
the officers that are on the bottom, I mean the actual line level people, they go through some type of training, right? Or what are they called? Actually, are they called different?
I think basically just patrol officers, okay. And of course, like all countries, they have male police officers as well as female officers. And also even in countries where it's predominantly Serbian, they also would have Muslim officers. Because when I went up to Bosnia, it was in the Republic of Srpska, which is predominantly Serbian, they took me to a small police station, okay, in a small city of maybe 20,000 people. And they took me to a police station, which really was kind of run down. But they also mentioned that they would have, Muslim police officers, not just, Orthodox, because the predominant religion in Serbia would be, among the Serbs, it would be Orthodox faith. But there are also mixtures of Croatians and also Muslims. And there are also mosques, it's like there would be churches.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This article we were talking about says that the term Muslim has been replaced with the term Bosniak.
Yeah, right. That's so accurate. That's one of the things they brought to my attention. It seems that the Muslims used the term Bosniaks. Was it Bosniaks? Bosniaks, okay. But the Serbs don't. You understand what I'm saying here? They say it's relatively recent. That's what I was. That's what was explained to me. Did the article agree with that? But they said it was probably the Muslims that used that term more so than maybe the Serbs or the Croatians. I don't know if the article said that or not.
Yeah. What's the role of the UN there still?
I think they have some sort of influence. Okay. Also, the European Union has some sort of influence. At the police college, the European Union actually gave monies for the building of the police college, because it moved from another location in the city of Banja Luka to its present location, and apparently the design and everything was done by, the monies were given by the European Union. Okay, but I think the United Nations or NATO is more. I think NATO is maybe more involved in Kosovo and with Serbia. Okay, and Kosovo is a part of Serbia, and Kosovo is predominantly Muslim. Okay, but
they
make that separate from Serbia. But that's 15% of the the landmass of Serbia.
I see.
But predominantly the more Muslims live there than Croatians. I think we all know about populations, and apparently it appears that, like Western Europe and the United States, we're only having one child or two children. The same thing is taking place with the Serbians or with the Croatians. And the Muslims are having five or six, having bigger families.
You saw that news story that came out today, I think, that the most, after July of this year, the most predominant name, it's second right now, but the most predominant name awarded to children born in Great Britain
is
Muhammad.
Hello?
Right now it's Jack with Muhammad right behind, but after
that right?
July, they say it's going to be Muhammad. Will be the most prominent.
Yeah. Well,
Great Britain.
Yeah. Well, well, we know the world is changing, right?
It certainly is, and that has all sorts of implications from all kinds of perspectives. That who would have ever thought that? I mean, I think a lot of British are surprised about that, actually.
Well, this shows that they have a large Muslim population.
They sure do. Did you notice anything in particular about the private security industry there? Was that?
No, we didn't really come into contact with the private security at all. It was my contact was with the university people at at Krakowicz, okay, and then at the college, the police college, predominantly with, you know, with the police people there, okay, and then I went to the private college, but even the contact person there was a retired police official from the Bonaluca Police, from the Republic of Srpska Police, so we didn't really get in much contact with the private security at all. It was all police, and the lectures were given to university students as well as the police commanders.
Were they attentive in class?
Well, I tell you truthfully, when I was at the, there's three different places I taught, and I can discuss each one. When I was at the University of Krakowicz, there was a minimum of about 60 people. I would say anywhere from about 60, 65 people, students in every class, okay? And some of them were, there were some police officers in the classes, and there were, you know, obviously predominantly most college-age students. But my host told me what he did was he made it voluntary for the students, okay? And all the students came, but out of four lectures, I was kind of amazed that there were anywhere from about 60 to 70, okay, something like that, approximately, okay? We gave everybody certificates. I think we gave about over 70-some certificates to the University of Krakowicz.
There's a full house there.
Oh, yeah. And really, they really were very attentive. There was no rudeness. There was no talking. Okay? But also, the most interesting thing is my colleague, we taught like Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Then on Friday night, he told the students that this was voluntary, and everything was voluntary now, that they would have the opportunity to meet me on a Friday night so they could ask me any questions. And then I would say about 35 or so, or anywhere from 30 to 40 students, you know, I was guessing, showed up on a Friday night at the university, okay?
Oh.
And, you know, I mean, and they had, you know, there's no hard liquor. There was soda pop or something like that they could drink. Mm-hmm. And I had a chance to talk to different students, and they would ask me different questions. And I was kind of, you know, having pictures taken with the students. And so that was very surprising that many students would show up. Okay, and they were kind of shy, and they didn't really ask questions, so I would go out and mingle with the students, ask them if they had any questions, and, you know, once the young lady's sick, and I have my picture taken with you, and, you know, you sit down and talk, and they would ask you some questions. And just like American students, they're concerned about getting jobs, and there's no difference. And they dress like us, you know, they all wear jeans, you know, like our young people do, and, you know, polo shirts or what have you.
But they're... positive spirit? I mean,
very, very positive. I would tell you, and I spent a lot of time walking through the streets with my colleague, you know, for exercise and that. I would say that I found the people to be very happy and to be very contented. I'm very satisfied with what they have because their economy is not that great. And also, it's kind of amazing, which you don't see in America, at least I don't see in Wichita, because everybody has a car. Since there's not so many cars, you see all the young people, even some of the maybe the older people, going hand in hand and, you know, and... before we all had cars, I guess.
They're probably pretty trim from all that walking, too, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, that's right. They are pretty, I didn't see obesity as a problem over there. But I think their food is probably not as chemicals. When I had tomatoes and that, I don't think it had a lot of chemicals in it. And the food, and it was very good, very, you know, everything was well-cooked. You know, always into a lot of salads, and fish was kind of big there. So I think they may eat a little more healthier than us. Of course, I've seen McDonald's, you know, in Belgrade. So,
what is the degree structure like that? Are they four-year degree programs or?
Well, there are four-year degree programs. Actually, the college, unlike American College of Law, they have a bachelor's degree at College of Law. And apparently, other countries in the world do this. And so you go for 4 years in the college of law. But they also have a program there, which I didn't get a lot of good chance to get in detail, which is also a security program. So, you know, so you can get a degree in security and hope you can work for some sort of security agency or for the police and security or go into the College of Law.
I've had a chance to lecture the law faculty at University of Bucharest. What is the life of a faculty member like there? Is there such a thing as tenure?
I think so. I think there's tenure. My host was a full professor, and there I guess I don't know how many years. But what I found out is, from what I can explain, that the salaries are not very good, but the university professors seem to be above average, or seem to at least be above the majority of the people who work.
How much would
I never gone into. I tell you the truth, I never understood Serbian money. I never had the opportunity to spend it, so yeah. I don't know. But they, you know, my host was a professor of criminalistics. His wife is also a professor in the medical field. So apparently, both of them were doing quite well, and they own their own flat, which will be an apartment. And both of them, their way in life is a different ours. They both would walk through the university, and they were different buildings. And their son, who went to high school, would also walk. Okay, even though he had a car, my host, they preferred to walk rather than drive their car.
What do you see on the streets there in terms of automobiles?
Excuse me.
Do you see about everything on the street in terms of automobiles, in terms of the European models, or is it?
I see small cars. I don't see any big cars. Okay, like we have in America.
Yeah.
It probably would be the compact cars, probably what we would call them.
Mm-hmm.
The small sized cars.
But I would say a faculty member there is probably not in the upper strata in terms of income in any way, are they?
Well, they're above average. That's my understanding.
Okay.
They're above average. Okay. And they seem to be quite, you know, the couple of the faculty members I talked to seem to be quite happy, okay? I had a chance to talk to faculty members, like a family law person, a faculty member there. My interpreter worked for the College of Law. He had a law degree. He also was a former journalist, okay? Learned speaking English since she was, a grammar school, what have you. And when I gave my lectures, he was the interpreter. Okay, even though a lot of the students spoke English, okay, they wanted to make certain that they would get the material across. So it was really quite exciting. And periodically, you know, some of the students at the end would ask some questions, which was fine.
Mm-hmm. Our faculty there assigned. Are they paid by course? That's true in some universities in Europe where, they don't have a standard load. You just get assigned courses and you're paid.
I think it's different. At least the university that I went to, the University of Krakowicz. Well, let me explain. Let's talk about two different things. Okay, the University of Krakowicz was predominantly the College of Law, meeting the dean, the vice dean, okay, is that they were full-time faculty. And they got paid for teaching, three courses or something along those lines, okay? So they were, full-time, faculty members. But I went up to the police college. My colleague, my host, from the University of Krakowicz, also taught up at the police college. Now, he got paid just for teaching that one course, okay? So he was not a full employee of the police college, okay? So his area would be criminalistics and community policing. So I think they got two models, just like in America, do exist. That's my impression, anyway.
It seems like they have, for the size and the population, they have a lot of universities, don't they?
Well, they seem to have a good number of universities.
Mm-hmm. And I was reading in this article that we were talking about that one of the issues that they've had based on, the disintegration of the education system because of the war was getting accreditation.
Yeah.
They're trying to, link up with this National European Union accreditation business, and some of the schools are in trouble doing that because they, they just structured their education differently.
Mm-hmm.
So, the transfer credits and that type of business. And I understood that some of the people that came back, that left during the war and went over and got PhDs and graduate degrees in the United States, law degrees, came back over there and some of the original faculty are a little jealous of them. They don't want to hire them.
Well, that could be a possibility. Okay, but Mike, only thing I'd say, and obviously I didn't get a chance. In 2 weeks I didn't get a chance. Since I was moving quite, to three different universities, and I was quite busy from morning to night. I didn't get a chance to get the feel of everything. But my understanding was that the College of Law, that they were not able to hire everybody in the law field. Like, for instance, there was one professor whose specialty was Serbian law, okay? And apparently there aren't that many professors out there who would be familiar with Serbian law, so apparently they don't have an overabundance, at least in the law area.
Mm-hmm.
That's the impression I received in Serbia.
When you get that bachelor's in law there, you can practice law, right?
That's right. I didn't go into all the details. I didn't ask him about the bar. You know, if they had a bar like we have a bar here, like a legal bar. Talking to the students, especially more like on Friday night when I met with some of them, that they were predominantly concerned about getting positions, and some of them did come from small towns. So, and with the economy not being that good, it's difficult for people to find jobs.
Did you hook any of them up with Wichita State?
Well, they would like to come to Wichita State. A couple of them would like to come. The chairman would, my host would want to send a couple to take courses underneath me, but I didn't know if they can financially afford it because, in a state institution, you have to pay out-of-state tuition, and that's kind of, that would be like $1,200 for a course. You know what I mean? So it's kind of expensive. Would you know that? It's kind of expensive.
There should be grant sources for that somewhere, I would think. Those are really, everybody talks about the value of these international exchange programs, so I assume somebody's willing to fund them.
That's a shame because some of these students, I think, would be committed and it would be good for them to come to America, but also be good for our students to be exposed to students from another culture.
Yeah, it sure would. So, that's an exciting experience, and what an honor to find out they're using your book and you didn't even know it.
No, I'm kind of amazed, really. Because you don't find out who uses your book and don't use your book, But that's okay. Actually, they gave me a copy of their book, and so everything's written in Serbian, the citations. And of course, you can't find it or anything, I can't read it, I should say. I can't read it,
Much of the language did you pick up? Much?
I didn't pick up anything, really. I was able to say Baralunka, which I never heard of the city before, the Republic of Srpska, and University of Lakovic. And I was able to learn to say my host's name, so that was a plus.
Everybody speaks English, don't they?
Yeah, right. I tell you truthfully, it's amazing. I've read some of his papers. He writes very well, writes excellent English. And even his speech is not bad, And of course, they're very self-conscious of it. They're concerned about it. But I know his English is much better than my Serbian.
Well, we're still working on that for lots of our high school graduates here.
Right. I know. I know what you're saying.
Really something. Well, what else you got in terms of a highlight of that? It sounds like you want to go back.
I think they would like me to come back. I think they were. I wanted to do a very good job for these individuals, but it's kind of interesting because I think everybody was pleased with my presentations. I got an email from my colleague, my host over there, I should say. He said some of the students were asking for me. They wanted to say hello to me. It was very, very nice. And then at the police college, the police director treated me really, was a great host. Actually, I gave a talk on police misconduct and how to prevent corruption to police commanders. So we had over 300 people at that lecture.
That's one of your specialties, and they should be getting your book.
Yeah, right. That's right. So the reception and hospitality was fantastic. I mean, probably one of the best experiences of my life, really.
Well, Michael, I appreciate you coming on tonight. I see Audrey here's waving at me again. That means
I think it's getting pretty close to the 9 o'clock hour or 10 o'clock hour your time, I guess.
Wanted to mention to people that I promised them if they were interested in Pat Buchanan's book, State of Emergency, The Third World Invasion and Conquest of America, that book review on for them, and I posted that book review on Conservative Justice Digest if somebody wants to take a look at it. They can do that. But that's a book I really enjoyed, and the book was data-driven throughout. It's one of the best discussions you'll ever hear on the immigration issue with data to back up everything he says. Regardless of your politics, you'll like the book. Well, again, thank you very much, Michael. And
talking about Keith, I hope it was worthwhile for you and your listeners.
It does. It always does, and we've got this thing archived, so don't forget to save it.
Okay, thanks a lot now, Keith.
Next week, we'll be having Sergeant Kevin Cavanaugh, and he's going to be talking to us about the taser in American policing and, I suppose, private security. And there are civilian models of that device, actually, so he'll be talking about that also. So I hope you join us next week. I'm sure we'll be meeting again.
Okay, take care.
Take care. Bye.
again. Don't know where, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Keep smiling through, just like you always do, till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far.